Are they helping? Are they coming? So,
yeah, they'll be coming.
So how many? How many you got
ready?
Already?
Okay. It's September 26, 2019, and I call the board study session of the Roland Unified School District Board of Education to order. It is now 4:32 p.m. Dr. Mitchell, will you please do roll call?
Yes. Carrie Chen.
Here.
Lynn Ebenkamp.
Here.
Angelina Pride.
Present.
David Malkin.
Present.
And Donna Friedman.
Here.
All board members are present.
Thank you. Are there any changes or items to be pulled from the agenda?
None from staff.
May I have a motion to adopt the agenda of the board study session of Thursday, September 26, 2019?
I make a motion.
I'll second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. I will lead all in attendance to in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Would you please stand?
Put your right hand over your heart. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dr. Mitchell, are there any public comments this afternoon?
Yes, there are.
Please note the public is welcome to provide comment to the board. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes unless extended or limited by vote of the board. A maximum of 20 minutes unless extended by the board is allocated for each subject discussed. The Brown Act open meeting regulations under which the board must operate do not allow board members to comment on non-agenda items or information you may bring up that are not in the agenda. Additionally, no action can be taken. However, the board may give direction to staff following a comment. Next, Roy Humphreys.
Working. Okay, I'm Roy Humphreys. Thank you for all the good things you do. Disservice to this district's community and the individual specifically, ex-principal, I mess up his name, I apologize for that, Yusef Nassos, and of the Nogales High School, deserved at least the recognition given at the board meeting for outstanding students, and you failed at that. He deserves a meritorious service citation with a V for valor and an oak leaf cluster in taking the job at Nogales High and staying more than a year. Yes, as I discovered while running for the board, Nogales High School was considered by staff as a violent penal colony to escape from. From the testimony of staff and Shay Lohman, as video recorded, many things have not changed. And apparently, Principal Yusef has made his escape, and he also deserves a statue out here in front of the district for his service to the district and this community. I also must thank, I can't thank enough Mr. Malkin for running and winning the election, for I would never, never have sacrificed the many for the few, as this district continues to do. The district continues to waste taxpaying education dollars on 26 excess teachers, as noted by Mr. Flores here, and the paying to hiring a propaganda organization for branding is just ludicrous and an abomination. And also refusing to video record these board meetings and the Bond Oversight Committee meetings for a cost of $69. Again, it just goes to what you're all about or what you're not. Thank you.
Next, we will have a facilities report. I will turn it over to Dr. Mitchell at this time.
Thank you very much. So this afternoon, we have for the board two topics, and Alex Flores, our Assistant Superintendent of Administrative Services, will kick them off for us.
Apologize for that. Thought I was going to get some assistance. President Friedman, Vice President Malkin, board members, Dr. Mitchell, cabinet and audience, Thank you for allowing us to make a presentation tonight on two specific topics. Tonight, we'll provide information on the opportunity to refinance two series within the 2006 bond and also provide an update on the Oswald project. We understand the dedication that our board and superintendent has to our community and transparency, and making sure that we serve our community with the bond funds correctly, with class, yes?
Just according to the agenda, I think the refinancing is B, isn't it? And A is the Oswald new campus? Sorry to interrupt. Sorry.
At this time, I would like to bring up Russ Hall. And Mark, you're staying a little later tonight. Over here. Again, good night. Take two. We're very excited for this opportunity to provide you an update on the next bond-funded facility improvement that will benefit our students in the Oswald community. Plans were submitted on time to DSA, and we have responded with comments. Our architect, construction manager, consultants, and district team have worked to respond to all DSA comments, and the architect will respond, the final response, by the end of this month. When we have all the plans approved and returned by DSA, the bid process for the construction will begin. We hope to have an approved bid by March, so demolition can begin in April. Although smaller projects were completed this summer, the project has, as planned, will break ground in December, with the installation of temporary housing. Russ will provide more details regarding the interim housing and phasing of the project. One of the board's goals is to communicate. I'm sorry.
Real quick, what is ZP?
Zimba Prieto Architects.
Okay.
Apologize. We understand one of the board's goal is to communicate regarding all projects. And we continue to communicate the status of the project as to inform everyone involved. Recently attended the Oswald Back to School Night and provided an update and shared materials on a board of all the different type of materials we'll use in the project. Now that this update will be provided to the board, I am scheduled to attend a staff meeting next Monday to provide this information as well, so the staff is well aware of the progress of this project. Jason Garcia is working on scheduling a parent community meeting for us, and with the assistance of Miriam Kim also. Thank you, Miriam, for your assistance. And again, community members are always welcomed to our CBOC meetings to receive an update on all bond-related projects. We're very excited about all the projects that we're doing here to benefit our students. At this time, I'd like to turn the mic over to Russ Hall from Ledesma Meyer, and he'll provide you an update on the phasing and also on the interim housing, which is the first step of this project.
Russ? Thank you, Alex. Good evening, everybody. Per Alex's request, I'll go over the timeline for the interim housing. The interim housing consists of 6 buildings and 12 classrooms. On 9/12, I'm sure you're aware of the fact that the board approved the project. On 9/20, when it went out to bid, the bid process will be completed in November 14th. And then there, somewhere around November 25th through the 31st, we'll be setting the interim housing on site, which will be the mobile classrooms there. There will be a little work after they're set. There'll be some site work and some other miscellaneous activities that will take place, but that's a general overview of the timeline of that. Our goal is to be set and have everything down for the spring break, which is 3:30 through 4:30. At that point, the district can occupy the portable interim housing, and that provides us an opportunity to demo the existing portables that are on site that are back in what would be, I think, the northwest corner. I think there's 12 buildings up there, if I'm not mistaken. So by doing that, that'll give us a little leverage that we need to get an early start on the project. Pretty excited about that. The interim housing is to be used for temporary administration housing as well during the phase four of the project. So I know that information is kind of scattered and a lot to take in. I know we've also talked about some of it in the past, but are there any questions about that before I go to the next slide? Because that's kind of broad.
On the interim housing, will there be plumbing put in for bathrooms?
No. No, they're dry portables.
So where would the bathrooms be in relationship to the classrooms?
Out in the field. There is a, if I'm not mistaken, a restroom building that they will be using, which is on the west side, and they'll continue to use the restrooms throughout the campus.
The only reason I'm asking is that this is...
Yeah, it's an existing building. If I'm not mistaken, the 12 that we're taking out probably don't have any. They're all dry anyway, so it's a one for one. Yeah.
I was thinking that's towards the winter, the rainy season. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The interim housing will be 6 buildings, and there'll be 2 classrooms per building, so it'll be 12. There'll be admin office. There'll be an admin. We'll move in there in phase four, but that won't happen until later in the project.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When you refer to breaking ground, mm-hmm. does that also mean setting the portables, or does that mean starting the new buildings and construction?
Well, it's kind of a broad term, but breaking ground to me means that the project is actually starting, whether it's actually literally the ground or not. So I guess it's just a construction term for getting started, basically. But in this case, we will be grading and pushing dirt around, so I guess it applies here as well. There's not a lot of grading to be done for the portables. We're not going to be pushing a lot of dirt around. We're pretty much going to use close to the same grade that's there. But we will have to demo and remove a lot of the grass area to put in an asphalt access for the fire department. So... and accessibility to the buildings for ADA. Okay, this is a slide that has an overview of all the phases. Which one's the pointer? This one. We have separate slides for each. My little pointer is not working. We have separate slides for each of these. So anyways, the interim housing goes in where the golden area is, where it says phase 1/phase 5. So that's where the interim portables are going to be set. And then I'll go through the other phases here with individual slides. And again, there's phase 1. The portable buildings will be set along the street line there. And that's going to...
So is that an empty field right now?
Yeah, that's the play field right now. So that kicks off the project by setting those first. And then once those are set and things settle down, then we put the main project out to bid. Then what we're calling phase 2 will begin. And that purple area there, where the building that says phase 2, those buildings will be demoed. Those are the ones we're hoping to get started on prior to the summer, so those will be demoed in April. And then there's a dotted line which outlines the area that we're going to use for the contractors, what we call lay down yard. So they'll set their construction trailer there, their job office, and we'll stage materials there. So we'll basically be accessing the project from, I believe it's Janice Lane is the name of it. We'll be coming off that cul-de-sac there, which is nice because we won't be traversing across the site. We'll kind of be set up on our own little area there. Shouldn't be too disruptive. And then we'll move into phase 3 once the first classroom building is done. The phase 3 includes a classroom building, which is, the outline of it is identical pretty much to the other building, but the floor plan itself is a little different inside, in that there's a few more classrooms. The phase one has a locker room in it, so it doesn't have quite as many classrooms. Anyways, the laydown area is drawn within that area. You can see where it's kind of the dashed line there. And we'll continue to access that by coming in off of Janice Lane and will not traverse across the site until the actual phase four. Well, actually, that's not true. We'll never really traverse across the site. We'll just change our direction from access. So in phase four, that's when we'll work on the remaining three buildings. There's five total for the project. So the building on the right, kind of L-shaped, looks like it's a multiple building. It's all one building. That's the kindergarten building. I'm sorry, I can't get this pointer to work. The building in the center is the admin building, and the building on the left is the NPR. And then this would outline phase five. Once those buildings get done, then we'll be working on the parking lot, and we'll remove the portables from the site, and then we'll clean up the yard and put the landscaping back down and return everything back to its original setup there with the grass and all that. This phase actually will be running in conjunction probably with the finishing items in phase four. So those buildings will be getting finished up, and this will be a summertime project. So as that's going on, then we'll finish up with the parking lot there. Is there any questions about some of those slides before I go further? I don't feel like I'm doing a super good job explaining it.
Refresh my memory. I remember when you showed these a long time ago, there was a discussion about where the buses would drop off versus where the parents would pick up their students. It was like a separation area.
I don't think we have that slide that shows the map of the parking lot. That's existing, correct, isn't it? Yeah.
But that's been worked out to separate the two.
Yes, to separate two and actually to include an opening so they could be able to use, so it would be less of a bottleneck. That was a recommendation from the staff that was there.
Yeah, okay.
Because the parking lot was shared with the staff, and they had some recommendations, and we took it back to the consultant to review it, and he believed that it would work also.
Okay.
Taking the input of the staff about after-school activities, how things go when there's some bottlenecks that take place. One point I wanted to bring up with the phasing is, as you can see, the timelines are really important. They're year-long phases. So they go from the summer to August. So it's really important that the timelines are met, because the movement of students go during that summer to the next year, and also for the teachers who are going to be using the interim housing. So it's really critical that we meet those timelines. And the first phase, actually phase two being just a few months longer, in phase two and phase three, the buildings are very similar, as Russ shared. But phase two, there's more lead time because there's a lot of steel that's required in these buildings. And as the orders are put in for the steel for the first building, they'll also be ordered for the second one. So that will make us speed up a little bit. And that's why we can get the second building done within a year, or we plan to.
For this phase, you don't have the entire August, because the school started the first week of August, right? So you have only 2.5 months to finish this project.
You're talking about the parking lot?
Yeah.
So the parking lot will start the second week and start it in June once school's out. And it'll hopefully be finished by the time school starts in August. So it's really the only time you can do it. So,
although that's a great point. Any August date you see is also related to the start of school, the day that school starts. That's the timeline that we have. We need a parking lot the first day of school, so it has to be done.
We know the feeling.
Where will the new NPR room be? The same place?
It's relatively in the same location as your existing NPR. I think your existing NPR, if I could see it, this one's not working either. But, yeah, it's basically in the same place.
Is it going to be bigger than
is
now? Okay.
Yeah, it's quite a bit bigger. It's actually two-story. And the upper story has the coral and some band areas in it and things like that. It's a smaller upper story, but it's...
And without an NPR room, their assemblies will be where, outside?
Okay.
Yeah.
I noticed over at Roland High, the NPR room or the hideout, I thought, it didn't have a stage, the new one. Is this one going to have a stage in it?
This one has a stage in it, yes. This is more of a lower grade stage that you're used to seeing in a multiple-purpose
right, right.
room.
It's
yeah. Of course, it's not a production-type stage. It does have a light bar on the back, and it has, you know, a four-foot elevation, and it runs the width of the room with the stairs on either side.
So the 3D model that you showed us at our last meeting, at the last time we had a facilities update, mm-hmm. nothing has been changed from that one.
No.
That was the one where we kind of
oh, yeah.
had to see, like,
when the architect really ZP was here, he walked us through.
Yeah, we saw the 3D
yeah, no,
model,
nothing's,
so everything's pretty status quo to that.
There's no changes in there visually at all. So we're making little changes with plan review, but we're talking about, you know, a plug here and a mic there. But
right.
no, I mean.
And also we're committed to the board that any significant changes that would take place, we would come back and share with the board and the community if there's any changes. That was a lesson learned from several years ago of a project, and we are committed to that. Staff and the team are well aware of that.
Are we going to have the same number of parking spots?
No, there would be a lot more parking spots in the new parking lot. Yeah.
We can go back over, too, if it's the interest of the board. I know Alex just brought in some of the drawings. This was to share with the board the phasing, not the specifics of the buildings and locations and so forth. But Alex did bring in the drawings that were presented to the board the last time prior to being submitted to DSA. So again, as asked, nothing has changed, submitted to DSA, but as we're anticipating now those plans coming out of DSA, we wanted to make sure that the board understood somewhat of the timeline and how that project will be phased, because we're getting closer now to actually moving dirt, and so we wanted to make sure that the board understood the phasing. And so we do have the drawings and information back here and can always provide that to the board should you have other questions.
Everything so far as submitted and as shared with the board is moving forward.
Okay, so just quick recap then. There's five phases. The first phase is going to start off with interim housing. Phase two is what we're calling it. It will be the west classroom. Then we'll move over to phase three with the east classroom. And then phase four will include the three buildings on the south end down here. And then phase four and phase five will run in conjunction at the same time. And after phase five, then we'll be wrapped up.
That's the next slide.
Yeah, right?
I think that was the next slide.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, so this slide talks about the construction of tentative timeline with the main project. So on April 6th, thereabouts, we're going to start what we call the procurement process for the project. By that, I mean the contractor will mobilize, we'll get submittals collected for all the materials, we'll start reviewing the shop drawings, and we'll approve a project schedule, and then we'll demo the 12 buildings in the phase two area. It's important to get a head start on these items because these are what we call long lead items with the shop drawings and the steel that Alex had talked about. It's very important to get your steel moving as soon as possible. It can really slow up a project. Submittals take a long time, too. There's thousands of submittals that go in for all the products. And then in May 2020 through July 2021, that's phase two. So that's the west classroom that we spoke about that was up there in the corner. Now you'll see that from here on in, it runs from summer to summer, as we spoke about. So basically, we'll be working on a phase. The kids will be excused for summer. When they come back from a summer break, then the district will have moved and we'll enter a new building. So that same pattern just repeats itself in June of 2021 to July of 2022. That's for the phase three. We'll be demoing the existing buildings on campus, which are, you see the letters there, C, D, E, G, H, and P1. And we'll construct the new east classroom. And then the same pattern again from June 22 to July 23, which will be phase four. We'll be demoing the remaining buildings, which are A, B, and F, for those of you who are familiar with the campus. and will construct the new admin, NPR kitchen, and kindergarten buildings. And June 12th through August 4th, which is that last summer, that's when we'll demo the existing parking lot and remove all the portables on the site. We'll remove the ones that are leaving, going back to the vendor, and we'll demo the rest that are no longer going to be needed, and we'll construct the new parking lot and finish all the site improvements.
If I can share also, I want to commend the team. I challenged them when we were putting this project together to make sure that we try to be honoring the students who were there the longest, because this project has taken a little longer to take place. And I challenged the team to work with phasing and work with the development so that our students who are there now could reap the rewards first. And as these buildings take place, some of the older grade levels buildings will take place first, so they'll be able to enjoy that building, that at least if it's not fully completed, those classrooms, and they can enjoy them. And also with making sure our buildings take place for kids first, and administration buildings or buildings like that would be last. And as you can see, the team met the challenge, and it worked out. We believe it worked out to be a good plan. I do want to say this looks really good on paper and looks good on the picture. We're doing a lot of work in a very small area. And I want to thank all the residents, all the parents, and all the students, and all the staff there, because it'll be very tight. And some of the recesses, we're going to try to do the best we can, but you know, for a period of time during construction, they will be compromised. And we'll see what we can do to offer support and help. But I just want you to understand that it will be very tight, and it'll be very difficult construction. But we're going to do everything we can to not impact our students in the instructional program.
Be sure to share that with the community when you have that community meeting.
We will.
Well, all construction involves noise. Fortunately, a lot of it comes from demo, like when we were up at the high school here and you're breaking a brick building. Fortunately, the existing buildings on this campus aren't built of the same structure. They're going to come down a lot easier and a lot quieter. Now, when you put your buildings back together, there is some noise involved with the construction of the structural steel, but it's not really that bad. Again, the noise basically comes from the demo of the existing buildings. So I don't expect it to be. I expect it to be lower than normal.
And Russ does a fantastic job, along with Larry, working with the principal at the school site with their weekly meetings to make sure if there's any significant activity or thing that's going to take place, that they can work around as much as possible the construction so that it doesn't impact the instructional day.
Yeah, it's actually a contractual requirement that we work around testing times at every campus. It's in your district front-end contracts. So then before we start a project, I always get a test schedule from the principal. And they outline which time of the years are more important than others, which buildings are more important than others during those times. And the contractors I've worked with, I haven't had any resistance with them, so I don't expect any problems there. Well, right now they'll be per phase here. These lay down areas is kind of where we'll corral the construction vehicles. We can't get all the vehicles on the site, so we'll put what we can within the dotted areas, and then the other ones will have to be out on the street. It, like Alex said, it's a pretty tight campus, so. Obviously, the parking lot's not going to be used. I mean, I've gone there for several site meetings, and I can barely get my car on site.
But when you had your community meetings, the residents know about that?
I don't know if that was covered or not, to be honest with you.
This our phasing portion and the complete laydown has not been shared.
I don't think it was established when we had our first one.
No.
We've still been working on it. So we'll do the best we can to, you know, try to make everybody happy, but something's, it's got to be a little leeway from everybody. Is there any other questions? Okay.
Can we thank you for the opportunity to share an update? Again, through the slide, you saw a tentative timeline. There are some things out of our control. And that, again, is we're meeting the needs that are requested from DSA, but we have no jurisdiction over them, and we are at their mercy, basically. There is some little wiggle room in here where we think we'll be fine, but still we want to make sure everyone understands it's tentative based upon them giving us approved plans. I would like to bring Mark back to... Again, we know that the board's interest and board's goal is to have world-class facilities for our students and also for us to be very appreciative of the support from our community with the bond measures and to make sure that we safeguard those funds so that we can do the most for those facilities and to make sure that anytime we have an opportunity to lower the burden on our taxpayers, that we take advantage of that and we always look at the market to see what we can do to say thank you again to our taxpayers who are supporting our students, especially with the three measure R's that were successfully approved by our taxpayers. So on a quarterly basis, Mark and I, we review the market. He does most of the work and see what opportunities are there for our district to look at some of the bonds that we have funded. Back on March 28th, one of our facilities meetings, we brought some information regarding an opportunity to refinance two of the funds in the 2006 to the series. At that time, it was approximately $2 million, and we were very excited to bring that forward to the board. But after analysis and looking at some forecasts, we felt there was an opportunity down in the near future to bring more savings to our taxpayers. And we took the opportunity to hold off and be a little conservative, slow down, and see if those were going to materialize. And I'm really happy to have Mark here to share what the current market is and what potential more savings we have for our taxpayers that we could take advantage if the board so chooses at the next board meeting. Mark?
Thank you, Alex. Good evening. So to recap, and a lot of this is just updated information from the board workshop in March, but we're looking at two series of bonds from the 2006 election, the 2006 Series B and the 2006 Series C, kind of highlighted here in blue. And as Alex mentioned, we're kind of been watching the market since that March meeting, and interest rates were kind of slowly going down a little bit, you know, every day, every week after that March meeting. And then the first week in August, things really accelerated. In a matter of a couple days, interest rates dropped by about 0.25%. And Alex and I were on the phone probably that week and deciding that, all right, it's probably a good time to accelerate the timeline and look at bringing this back to the board. You can see the interest rates kind of hit a low at the end of April, bounced up a little bit. It's hard to see, but they've come back down again these last few days. In March, this index that we look at, this is a 10-year bond index, the rate was 2.05%. Today it's at 1.4. So interest rates have come down very significantly since March. So what that means, kind of bottom line, dropping down to the bottom right of this table, the savings right now, or as of September 12th when we ran the numbers, about $3.2 million of savings, $3,189,000 of savings that would go back to taxpayers in the form of lower tax rates on their tax bills. And then you can see the savings broken out between the Series B and the Series C. The Series B is a very small financing, a very small amount of savings. It's worth doing only because we're refinancing the Series C bonds. There's no added cost to refunding the Series B bonds. So you can see we've got about $73,000 of costs allocated. That's just basically splitting the total cost proportionally based on the size. So it's not like we're adding $73,000 of cost to refinance the Bs. The cost would be pretty much the same if we didn't refinance the Series B bonds. The total savings would just go down a little bit. So again, makes sense to do since we're doing the C, but doing that on its own would not make sense. And here we've presented the savings on an annual basis, and also on the far right you can see the projected tax rate impact. Most of the bonds are kind of on the longer end, so you can see 2031 to 2034 is where the bulk of the savings are, $445,000 a year in those years. So there we see the tax rate estimated to drop about $2 per $100,000. In the earlier years, you know, somewhere between 75 and 80 cents per $100,000, so a little bit smaller in the earlier years. In terms of timing, as Alex mentioned, we be prepared to bring the resolution back to the board at your October 10th meeting. Shortly after that, we would have a conference call with the rating agencies, update the district's credit rating. As you hopefully remember, we've got excellent credit ratings, AA2 from Moody's, AA- from Standard & Poor's, so that AA category kind of puts you amongst kind of the top group of school districts. We could basically post the preliminary official statement. This is the offering document that discloses all the pertinent information that an investor would want to know about the district. We work very hard with staff and council to make sure that everything that should be disclosed to the investors is disclosed to the investors. Sell the bonds on November 5th. That would lock in the interest rates, set the interest rates, and then wrap everything up, do all the paperwork, and finalize everything by December 4th. So November 5th is basically, on this timeline, the date when we'd lock in the interest rates and lock in the savings. Up until that point, that $3.2 million number can fluctuate based on what happens with the market. One thing that has changed since the district last issued bonds in 2015, in 2016, the legislature approved SB 1029, that, among other things, requires all municipal bond issuers to have a formal debt policy. A lot of what goes into the policy was already really written into the education code in terms of limiting what types of debt a school district could issue. As part of a good governance requirement, there now needs to be a formal debt policy. And then there's also a new report that gets filed with the state treasurer's office called an annual debt transparency report that's only for bonds issued after 2017. So there will be another additional kind of filing requirement that the district has every year to update the treasurer's office on, you know, how many bonds you have outstanding, what you've paid off in the particular year. And so here are kind of the list of the high-level list of requirements in the debt management policy. That policy will be brought at the same time as the resolution to do the refunding bonds, so that policy needs to be in place before you can issue the bonds. Some of them, the purposes that debt may be issued for, the types of debt that may be issued, a lot of that was already in the education code, so this is now formalized in your policy. Some other things are good governance. So, again, the relationship of your debt and why you're issuing debt relative to your budget and incorporating that into your budget, having goals and policies around why you would be issuing debt and certain types of debt, and then internal control procedures about monitoring your debt and making the decisions around issuing debt. Thank you. And so open for questions.
I have a question. So on the potential financing schedule, you said that November 5th would be the lock-in day. So at what point, you know, because as you indicated, we all know interest rates can change. At what point do we say, okay, yeah, it's not worth it anymore?
That's a good question. If we go back. you know, if you know, we are, let's see, the average rate on that 10-year rate going back the past 10 years is 2.25%, and we're at 1.4% right now. You know, I think, you know, if we, and we were 2.05 in March. So even in March at 2.05, we were starting to say this is looking like a good opportunity. So I think if we can stay, you know, at least reasonably below, significantly below that 2.05 kind of level, then I think it would make sense. If something were to change and kind of rates were to start moving well north of that 2% kind of level, kind of looking at that average, then we might say, well, what's going on? Why are rates moving up that quickly, and does it make sense to keep moving forward? Or do we potentially wait? Because part of the strategy and the thinking was we may be waiting until the district issued its last series of Measure R bonds, because then you could kind of get even more economies of scale by doing all of the bonds together. But seeing how much the rates dropped, rates basically hitting historic lows again in August, we thought, you know what, let's get this teed up, ready to go. And if we can kind of hold rates about this level, then it would probably make sense to move forward.
And is there any cost to us if we back out? And
the only cost, and if we go back to the schedule.
She means cost if we don't do it?
Right.
Sure. The only potential cost if you don't do it, and we've tried to kind of keep this in a very tight window, is the rating. So for example, our fees, legal counsel putting all the documents together, all of that's contingent. The only time where we get any bill is from the rating agencies. Once we kind of engage them, have that conference call, they have to charge you something. And so it wouldn't be the full amount of their normal bill, but you would potentially be getting a bill from the rating agency if, we had that meeting on the 14th, and we get to November 4th and decide, you know what, the market's just not where we want it to be. Then it's just a matter of time. If we can get to market soon enough, we can still use that rating. If not, then yes. And that's, off the top of my head, maybe that risk is, in the $20,000 range, $20,000 to $30,000 maybe. I can get a better number, but kind of an order of magnitude. Those, we're talking maybe $20,000, because we have two different rating agencies.
I just have a request. Could you, the graph that we saw with the market?
Yes.
Could you get us the copy that you have up there? Because ours don't have all those dates across the bottom. They just have like 10 years. Mine does.
Okay. Yeah. Probably just from kind of the printing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
It doesn't. No, it's this one.
No,
it doesn't. Yeah. Did yours have it?
No.
Oh.
It's just a different version of it. This one, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a different version.
Yeah, we can. I'll send a PDF, and that way we won't have the. Sometimes I know PowerPoint can do weird things on different printers.
That's my bad habit. I didn't talk to Mike.
Sure.
This page, why 2030 and 2031 is the day, is the year get most of savings, and the from 31 to 34 debt savings, the 445, 446, 443, 447, and how they related to the last column.
Right.
How can you explain?
Sure. So the bonds that we're refinancing, primarily we're looking at the Series C bonds. Those payments go all the way out until 2034. Mm-hmm. And the principal payments are really all between 2031 and 2034. So that's why there are more savings in that 2031 to 34 range on an annual basis compared to the 21 to 30 period. And so because that's where basically the principal payments are, as we refinance those principal payments with lower interest rates, we're lowering both the interest and the principal amount that's due in those years.
So we're paying interest from the first day until 30-30, most of interest.
Correct. That's mostly interest, and then the principal and interest in 2031 to 2034.
And why is that? Why is it not a straight line?
Part of it has to do with this particular series of bonds and how it was issued relative to all of the other 2006 bonds, so the election of 2006 bonds. So the overall kind of plan or goal typically when you have a bond measure is you're setting up all of the series of bonds to have a certain payment amount every year because the you know, let's say you have a $60 per 100,000 tax rate for a particular bond measure. You're then setting up, you know, the 2, 3, 4 series of bonds that you're issuing from that bond measure. Those payments combine to have that to stay below that $60 per 100,000 tax rate. And I'm just using that as the Prop 39 limit. And so when you start looking at each individual series of bonds, you might see some differentiation in the principal amount. So I'd have to go back and look, but potentially you had your Series A and your Series B bonds that had more principal going out until 2030. So then the Series C bonds had to have the principal coming due after the principal for Series A and Series B were being paid off. So that's likely the reason why there's more principal there than in the earlier years for Series C, because you already had the Series A and the Series B bonds that had principal in those earlier years. And then the column on the far right, it's a little bit more complicated and more things go into it than this, but if you basically take that debt service amount, that kind of annual payment amount, you divide that by your property taxes, that's the tax rate. And so this dollar amount savings on the far right, that's, you know, when we reduce the payments by $135,000 a year, let's say in year 21, then, or let's say 22, because that's where we have just the Series C bonds only, that equates to about 87 cents per 100,000 on a tax rate. And so it's basically just taking those savings amount, dividing it by your total property taxes.
Mm-hmm. In other words, we don't get so much saving until...
Right, for this particular series, yes, most of the savings, you know, when people see it on their tax bill would be on the, you know, it's starting in 2031.
It depends on the, this particular series or the financing company or how?
It's based on this particular series. Well, not really. You could change this and say we want to pay the bonds off earlier and have no savings in the early years and shorten the term, but we couldn't create more savings in the earlier years because it would basically be we just have to, you know, take out what little principal there even is in those years.
My question is, even so, the first 20 years, even some point the interest drop again. That we doesn't make any sense we refinance because it will pay interest. The principal are still the same.
Well, no, you will be able to refinance these again. So likely,
but it doesn't help.
It would help. It would reduce the interest. It potentially could reduce the interest costs again. Mm-hmm. The challenge will honestly be that interest rates are so low right now that you know, the odds of in 8 years from now rates being low enough that we can refinance again. You may be able to do it, but we're probably
not worth
it. Well, it may be worth it, but we're probably not talking about another $3 million of savings. Maybe it's $500,000 of savings or $1 million of savings, but it's, you know, the amount of savings is relative to how high your interest rate is today relative to what the market is. So we're replacing bonds that right now have an average interest rate of 4.6%. With bonds that are going to have an average interest rate of 2.5%.
And the general obligation
yes,
bonds.
Yes, general obligation bonds.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I just want to say, you know, recently there's been numerous articles in the paper about school district bonds. and about companies that do the refinancing, flipping them, selling them, and then also school districts not having transparency in doing the bonds. So I thought when I saw this topic, I felt it was a no-brainer that we should refinance if we can do it at a lower rate. There's no question about that. I was actually more concerned about our rating as a school district if we do this. And so to do my due diligence, I looked up your company on the internet. And this for the other board members as a brief summary. It says that Dale Scott and Company Incorporated, this is a summary of several websites, is one of the oldest and most conservative financial advisory firms in the state. They have extensive experience in working with mid and large sized districts and serve as financial advisors to the California Board of Associations and short-term borrowing programs and are recommended by the School Services of California. Since being founded in 1987, DSC has served as financial advisor for over 1,000 California K-14 financing, totaling over $15 billion. In 2014, they bought over 100 financings to the market, nearly double the amount of their nearest competitor. So you have a very good rating.
Thank you.
On the internet.
Appreciate that.
So I feel more confident doing this.
We try our best.
Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity, and this will be coming forward in the October board meeting. And I, to echo Ms. Pride's comments regarding the rates, if there's anything that was to change, we will definitely let the board know. And I'm going to be working with Mark to see if we can actually provide, if the board so chooses, takes action on it, to provide maybe some weekly updates on current rates so that you're aware of what the market condition is, so that you could be really confident and secure that we're doing the best for our taxpayers.
And we need to be sure to share that with the public when we're doing it so they know we're saving the money.
Yes, we'll work with our Gina Ward on that. This concludes our presentation out of order, but it concludes it. And again, I want to thank Mark for being here tonight.
Thank you. On behalf of the board, Alex, thank you so much, and everybody that presented and gave us all that important information. We will recess to closed session at 5:25 p.m. Thank you.
I apologize to Mark. I didn't recognize him. Mark was back there. Our bopper.
Good evening. We have returned to open session at 6:32 p.m. There is no closed session report tonight. May I have a motion and a second to adjourn the board study session of the Roland Unified School District Board of Education?
I make a motion.
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Meeting is adjourned at 6:32 p.m. It's September 26, 2019, and I call the special board meeting of the...
Pause for one second for the tape.
What about the other one, then?
He did it. Oh. You stop and start. Did you start again? Stop and start. Thanks.
Oh, gosh. Thank you.